Nah,
we're just trying to win this dance contest.
You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astronaut.
We got the Refugees All Stars, Rubber Devin in the club, Y Clef Jean.
Look at shorty got back. Should I ask her for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cash talking to her. Buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another one half hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. Get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me. I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My food slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the map, you ain't half nick.
Welcome. It's Thursday, November. I think it's 10th. Yes, 10th. Tomorrow's November's Day. It's not November's Day, it's Remembrance Day. So we have to be thankful for all the sacrifices that our armed forces have made in the past. So welcome. We have a new world. I don't know how it's going to impact astronomy, but Trump is going to be president. Yikes. Anyway, we're an astronomy talk show, so hopefully I can keep away from that. Okay, so there's lots of topics to talk about, and I want to talk a bit about maybe black holes and a certain black hole. It's an article that is in www.nasa.gov, dated November 9th. So it's a starvation diet for black hole dims brilliant galaxy. And there's a picture of a black hole devouring something. Okay, astronomers may have solved the mystery of the peculiar volatile behavior of a supermassive black hole at the center of a galaxy. So remember, supermassive black holes, those are black holes on the order of millions of solar masses. We have in the gravitational wave detection last year, I think they call them solar mass black holes when they're 20, 30, 40, 50 times the mass of our sun. But when we're talking about supermassive black holes, these are black holes at center of galaxies. They're thought to power the galaxies. And for example, our black hole in the center of our galaxy is thought to be about 4.3 to 4.6 solar masses. So what astronomers are looking at now is a supermassive black hole at the center of a galaxy. Combined data from NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and other observatories suggest that the black hole is no longer being fed enough fuel to make its surroundings shine brightly. Many galaxies have an extremely bright core or nucleus powered by material falling towards a supermassive black hole. These so-called active galacti nuclei, or AGN, big A, big G, big N for active galacti nuclei, AGN, are some of the brightest objects in the universe. I always hear that. I hear this is the brightest, that's the brightest, so I'm not sure what's the brightest anymore. Astronomers classify active galacti nuclei into two main types based on the properties of the light they emit. One type of active galacti nuclei, or AGN, tends to be brighter than the other. The brightness is generally thought to depend on either both of two factors. The AGN could be obscured by surrounding gas and dust, or number two, it could be intrinsically dim because the rate of feeding of the supermassive black hole is low. Some active galacti nuclei have been observed to change once between these two types over the course of only 10 years, a blink of an eye in astronomical terms. However, the active galacti nuclei, or AGN, associated with the galaxy Markarian 1018 stands out by changing type twice, from a faint to a bright active galactic nuclei in the 1980s, and then changing back to a faint AGN within the last 5 years. A handful of AGN have been observed to make this full cycle change, but never before has one been studied in such details. During the second change in type, the Markarian 1018 AGN became 8 times fainter in x-rays between 2010 and 2016. Some suns, for example, like a Betelgeuse, they fade and then they become brighter in a certain cycle. So I don't know how this is different. This is a black hole. After discovering the AGN's fickle nature during a survey project, astronomers requested and received time to observe it with both NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and Hubble Space Telescope. The accompanying graph shows the AGN in optical light from the left with a Chandra image of the galaxy's center region in an X-ray showing the point source of the AGN right. So there's a picture here that shows the active galactic nuclei, and then there's a magnification. So I don't know what the difference is. Data from Ground Bay Telescope, including the VTL, which is the Very Large Telescope of the European Space Agency, allowed the researchers to rule out a scenario in which the increase in the brightness of the AGN was caused by the black hole disrupting and consuming a single star. The data also cast doubt on the possibility that changes in obscuration by intervening gas cause changes in the brightness of the AGN. However, the true mechanism responsible for the AGN's surprising variation remains a mystery until Chandra and Hubble data was analyzed. Chandra observations in 2010 and 2016 conclusively showed that obscuration by intervening gas was not responsible for the decline in brightness. Instead, models of the optical and ultraviolet light detected by Hubble, NASA's Galaxy Evolution Explorer, and the Sloan Digital Sky Survey in the bright and faint state showed that the active galactic nuclei had faded because the black hole was being starved of infallen material. This starvation also explains the fading of the AGN. One possible explanation for this starvation is that the inflow of fuel is being disrupted. This disruption could be caused by interactions with a second supermassive black hole in the system. A black hole binary is possible as the galaxy is the product of a collision and merger between two large galaxies, each of which likely contain a supermassive black hole in its center. Well, with this, we're looking at our future because we are going to eventually merge with the Andromeda Galaxy. It was thought that this would happen within 4 to 5 billion years, but now what happened is they've recently detected that the Andromeda Galaxy reaches much further out than was thought. So it could be closer to us than we think. And given that, since we are inside the Milky Way, but astronomers are now still unable to see if the Milky Way is bigger than thought. If they both are, they're closer to each other, they're going to merge sooner than thought. So what's going to happen is Andromeda is going to fly by us, and then on the rebound, going to merge with our galaxy. So there's going to be a galaxy merger. And this particular system, it didn't say how far away it was, but it's possible it has a binary supermassive black hole system. So the supermassive black hole at the center of the Andromeda Galaxy, I bet, is much bigger than ours, but ours is still pretty big at 4.6 million. So I'm not sure what the point of this article was. I thought I'd read it because it looked like it said, the article said, starvation diet for black hole dims brilliant galaxy. No, that sounded interesting, but after I read the article, well, it didn't sound so interesting at all, at least to me. Okay, so now I'm going to go on a break, and when we come back, we are going to talk more about astronomy, not about the U.S. election that has surprised everybody, and it's a scary thing. Anyway, this is Mark, you're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9.
Known pimp, narcotics king, big time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is. You need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life. Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV. My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future, and those forgotten classics that need a little rescue. Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. We're talking about black holes, and the article was interesting in terms of the title. When I read through it, it wasn't as interesting as I thought it'd be. Okay, let's go to another one. We have an emergency response system in Vancouver. I believe it's at Cassiar and Hastings in case of an earthquake or something like that. Now, NASA is conducting an emergency planning exercise. Maybe is that similar? Okay, here's the name of the title. It is called NASA and FEMA Conduct Asteroid Impact Emergency Planning Exercise. So what if an asteroid did hit the Earth? On the radio the other day, I was listening to somebody, an organization is giving away free food in case of a calamity. So that could, if an asteroid hit us, boy, that would be a calamity, wouldn't it? So here goes the article. It's called NASA and FEMA. So NASA is the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and NASA and FEMA are conducting asteroid impact emergency planning exercises. Here goes the article. What would we do if we discovered a large asteroid on course to impact Earth? While highly unlikely, that was the high consequence scenario discussed by attendees at an October 25th NASA FEMA tabletop exercise in El Segundo, California. So in El Segundo, that's close to the LA airport, that used to have the highest concentration of scientists in the world, because all the defense firms were headquartered there. So even more than Silicon Valley or Japan or any other place. So I'm not sure if they still have that, but I'm sure they do. Lots of scientists there. The third in a series of exercises hosted jointly by NASA and FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. The simulation was designed to strengthen the collaboration between the two agencies, which have administration direction to lead the U.S. response. And the U.S. response would be if an asteroid hit the Earth. So says Thomas Zurbuchen, Associate Administrator for NASA Science Mission Directorate in Washington. And quote, it's not a matter of if, but when we will deal with such a situation. But unlike any other time in our history, we now have the ability to respond to an impact threat through continued observations, predictions, response, planning, and mitigation. I like that word, mitigation. Sounds cool. Mitigation is probably how you react to it, isn't it? What happens after the fact? The exercise provided a forum for the planetary science community to show how it would collect, analyze, and share data about a hypothetical asteroid predicted to impact Earth. Emergency managers discussed how that data would be used to consider some of the unique challenges an asteroid impact would present for preparedness, response, and public warning. So I guess what happens with an asteroid, like supposedly the one that killed the dinosaur, the worst thing is about the impact is after the asteroid hits Earth or the comet hits Earth, it kicks up so much dust and blocks out the sun. And that's what the threat is, I guess. How long would it block out the sun? A year, a month, 2 years, who knows? Back to the article. So says FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate, end quote, "It is critical to exercise these kinds of low probability but high consequence disaster scenarios." Hang on, I lost my place. "By working through our emergency response plans now, we will be better prepared if and when we need to respond to such an event." Exercise attendees included representatives from NASA, FEMA, NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, the Department of Energy's National Laboratories, the U.S. Air Force, and the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services. The exercise simulated a possible impact 4 years from now. A fictitious asteroid imagined to have been discovered this fall with a 2% probability of impact with Earth on September 20, 2020. The simulated asteroid was initially estimated to be between 300 and 800 feet or 100 and 250 meters in size, with a possibility of making impact anywhere along a long swath of Earth, including a narrow band of area that crossed the entire United States. In the fictitious scenario, observers continued to track the asteroid for 3 months using ground-based telescope observations, and the probability of impact climbed to 65%. Then the next observations had to wait until 4 months later due to the asteroid's position relative to the sun. Once observations could resume in May of 2017, the impact probability jumped to 100%. By November 2017, it was simulated that the predicted impact would occur somewhere in a narrow band across California or just south of the coast in the Pacific Ocean. While mounting a deflection mission to move the asteroid off its collision course has been simulated in previous tabletop exercises, this particular exercise was designed so that the time to impact was too short for a deflection mission to be feasible, to pose a great future challenge to emergency managers faced with evacuation of the metropolitan Los Angeles area. Scientists from JPL, Lawrence Livermore, and Sandia National Laboratories and the Aerospace Corporation presented predicted impact footprint models, population displacement estimates, information on infrastructure that would be affected, as well as other data that could realistically be known at various points throughout the entire scenario. So says FEMA National Response Coordinator Branch Chief Leviticus A. Lewis. "The high degree of initial uncertainty coupled with a relatively long impact warning time made this scenario unique and especially challenging for emergency managers. It's quite different from preparing for an event with a much shorter time, with a much shorter timeline, such as a hurricane. Attendees considered ways to provide accurate, timely, and useful information to the public, while also addressing how to refute rumors and false information that could emerge in the years leading up to the hypothetical impact. These exercises are invaluable for those of us in the asteroid science community responsible for engaging with FEMA on this natural hazard, said NASA Planetary Defense Officer Lindley Johnson. "We receive valuable feedback from emergency managers at the exercises about what information is critical for their decision-making, and we take that into account when we exercise how we would provide information to FEMA about a predicted impact." Well, again, this article wasn't exciting as I thought it'd be. Now, there's another article. It says, "Hubble steals a look at a hungry giant." It's dated November 10th, so it's today. Let's see what this article says. NGC 1222, seen in this image taken with the Wide Field Camera 3 on board the NASA Hubble Telescope, is a galaxy with a rather eventful story to tell. NGC 1222 has been described as a peculiar example of a type of galaxy known as a lenticular galaxy. Astronomers think that NGC 1222 is in the process of swallowing up two smaller dwarf galaxies that strayed too close to it, just like the Milky Way is swallowing up the Magellanic Clouds, or ripping them apart anyway. It is likely that the encounter was a trigger for the starburst in NGC 1222, bringing in fresh supplies of gas that are now fueling the burst of star formation. Typically, it's very interesting to talk about these things because sometimes in astronomy, for example, a million years is a blink of time. It's no time at all. It's really nothing sometimes. And when we think of our lifetimes, the most 100 years, that's a blink of a blink of a blink of a blink. So a lot of these things, they're trying to look at things that happen over millions or billions of years and trying to make conclusions about them, which is very interesting. Now back to the article. Typically, this kind of galaxy would present a rather smooth appearance on the sky and would consist mostly of old reddish stars. A bit dull, perhaps, but NGCC3 or NGC1222 is certainly not a typical member of its class, and it's anything but dull. Observations show the characteristic features of very recent star formation on a huge scale, an event known as a starburst. The reason for all this violent activity is caused by the fact that NGC-1222 is not alone. It actually contains three compact regions, each of which appears to be the central nucleus of a galaxy. So it looks like there's one big giant galaxy, and there's a couple of dwarf galaxies around there that are being swallowed up or torn apart or chewed up. Back to the article. Although its peculiarities were first seen in photographic images, these were not able to reveal the level of fine detail that can be recovered by Hubble. The image taken by Hubble allows us to see an astonishing amount of structure in this galaxy, emphasizing its colorful history against the smooth background of old stars. That was the original lenticular galaxy. We can clearly see dark filaments of dust and bright filaments of gas, both associated with the powerful star formation. So it looks like what's happening is there, it's a hungry galaxy. It looks, the title says Hubble steals a look at a hungry giant. So what happens is there's a big galaxy, NGC-1222. It has a couple of dwarf galaxies around it, and they're getting too close. So the gravity of NGC-1222 is ripping it apart. It is probably siphoning gas into the galaxy of NGC-1222. When this is happening, there's a lot of new star formation, which is an exciting thing. So again, these things take place on a scale of billions or millions of years. So when we get a snapshot, even NASA says, well, we studied this from 2010 to 2016. It's not really a very long time, because in astronomy, millions and billions of years, that's a long time. Okay, I'm going to go to one more article. It's called Hubble Takes Flight with the Toucan and the Cluster. So this is an article dated November 4th, 2016, and it's about galaxies. So I'm going to read the article. It may be famous for hosting spectacular sights such as the Toucana Dwarf Galaxy and 47 Toucanae, the second brightest globular cluster in the night sky, but the southern constellation of Toucana, the Toucan, also possesses a variety of unsung cosmic beauties. One such beauty is NGC 299, an open star cluster located within the small Magellanic Cloud, just under 200,000 light years away. Open clusters such as this are collections of stars weakly bound by the shackles of gravity, all of which formed from the same massive molecular cloud of gas and dust. Because of this, all the stars are the same age and composition, but vary in their mass because they formed at different positions within the cloud. This unique property not only ensures a spectacular sight when viewed through a sophisticated instrument attached to a telescope such as Hubble's Advanced Camera for Surveys, but gives astronomers a cosmic laboratory in which to study the formation and evolution of stars, a process that is thought to depend strongly on a star's mass. So thank you for listening. I keep promising I'm going to get my interviews from the LIGO Observatory, and I will get those done soon. But I'm an author, like I told you guys, and I'm crazy into writing books now. And sometimes I can sit there 10 hours a day and write my books. So that's what I'm doing these days, writing books. So I'll try to get it on next week for sure. So have a, please honor the memory of those who gave for protecting our freedom in the wars. Tomorrow's November 11th, Remembrance Day. So thank you. You've been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.